You're listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners. To donate, click on the Canada Helps button or go to westhill.net/donate.
Okay, so what I'm really introducing you to is the studio at West Hill, a concept that we came up with following our last annual meeting to talk about something that we could do that was a little different from church. And so what I'm going to take you through is the whole background to why we believe that that's an essential element of what our work going forward is, and why we think also, you're just too tall, Randy, why we think also that it's a significant piece of work that we at West Hill are specifically gifted to be able to do at this time. So the process, to let you know what the process was, now we're not going to work. Nice. There. Oh, it's just slow. Okay, I got to get a feel for this. One, two, there. Okay, October 2012, the board met, and we talked about a vision of what the congregation might do, not in the coming year, but a vision that would take us 10 years into the future, that would help us plan where it was we wanted to go by setting before us the idea of what that might look like. Following that, a strategic plan was put together by a small group that came back to the board with that strategic plan in January of 2013 and took it to the congregation. The congregation approved that plan at that meeting, and a small group then went into a marketing session. The marketing session was led by Bill Bishop, who has a company called The Big Idea, and what he does is he gets together with entrepreneurial groups and helps them come up with an idea that is significantly needed in community, something that the community doesn't currently have and that you are particularly gifted and can strategically place yourself to offer. So we had that marketing session in February 2013, shortly after the annual meeting. And then after that, we went into a series of meetings and meetings and more meetings, because we'd come up with an idea at that marketing session that sounded really doable and very exciting. And although, as Bill said to us, what you've really got now is the car. You can put whatever kind of steering wheel and upholstery and paint job and engine in it that you want, but you've come up with the idea, which is the car. And that's what we did in those meetings. We designed the interior, we came up with a really awesome set of headlights, you know, whatever. But we really honed that idea and made it something that we thought, hey, Linda, back from New Zealand, and thought that would be something that we could do, that we were particularly gifted to be able to do, and that the world needs, and that over the course of the next 10 years, we would be able to bring into fruition. We put together a grant application based on the work that we had done, which hit the desks of the executive of Toronto Southeast Presbytery in October of 2013. The process that the executive takes at that point in time is to recognize whether or not the application fits the criteria for a fund that is called the Presbyteries, that is held by the Presbyteries of Toronto Conference Corporation. And we put an application into that group for about $150,000. And that application has been sitting there. A group is being collected together to review it, and we're hoping that we'll hear something back from that in the next little while. We also went into a grant writing process for other funding organizations in the country. One that we have specifically written a grant for is the J.W. McConnell Foundation, their social innovation grant. And so we have put in an application, or we will put in an application for about $150,000 for that funding body as well. So those are the things that we've done since October 2012 and since the last annual meeting to bring you up to speed. I'm going to now take you on a bit of an environmental scan to see sort of what is it that's out there that we need to address or that we can address. What are the are the systems that we're up against? What are the resources that we have? What's going on out there that might help us? And I'm going to talk to you about this in the sense of the global, in terms of just like the blanket sort of experience that we're in this time in the world. And I'm going to bring some perspective that comes from the world, the Alliance of Reformed Churches, and from the United Church of Canada to speak about that. I'm going to talk about the communal realities, and in that I'm talking about around us in Scarborough. What is this particular neighborhood looking like, and what is it in need of? And then I'm going to talk about the religious, the scan of the religious world, and what's happening in religion, and specifically in Christianity, Protestant Christianity at this time, and how we affect that. Now, the word that's going to come up here is not the word global. It's the word empire. Empire is a concept that has been used, particularly within churches and religions, to talk about that challenge that currently exists between those of us who want to create a world in which all people have rights and access to wellness, and those systems that seem to be at play to do other things. A definition of empire that comes from the World Alliance of Reformed Churches. Empire is the convergence of economic, political, cultural, geographic, and military imperial interests, systems, and networks that seek to dominate political power and economic wealth. It's not like, you know, a bad guy went out and did something nasty. It's that systems have evolved through choices that have been made by governments, by corporations, by individuals, by leaders, that lead to this kind of situation. It typically forces and facilitates the flow of wealth and power from vulnerable persons, communities, and countries to the more powerful. Now, many in the Christian organizations look to the systems that were in place at the time of Jesus' life to validate their understanding of empire, to recognize that much of what our liberal interpretations of Jesus' work and those things he's purported to have said, that those were about Jesus coming into conflict with the systems of empire that were in existence at the time. And John Dominic Crossan does a phenomenal job of looking at the system of empire, the Roman Empire, and how those that were in the early Christian movements, some of them saw their role as undermining that empire or speaking directly against it. I don't believe that we need to go back to biblical scripture, to go back to those stories in order to assess whether or not our work against empire is important. The United Church of Canada, in its work that came, this continues the World Alliance of Reformed Churches. Empire today crosses all boundaries, strips and reconstructs identities, subverts cultures, subordinates nation-states, and either marginalizes or co-opts religious communities. So empire, again, it's not an individual and it's not a one-on-one. It affects individuals incredibly, but it's because they are caught in these enormous systems. The United Church of Canada, as I was saying, the United Church of Canada looked at the concept of empire and delivered a report in 2007 called Living Faithfully in the Midst of Empire. And this quote is from that document. All subjects of empire are indoctrinated by falsehoods, distortions, and misrepresentations that give rise to overt and covert forms of violent power over ourselves, others, and the planet. So some of the elements of empire that I draw from this are that there are, in the world, as we are seeing now, growing inequities in wealth distribution, disenchantment with the original promise of a global economy, imminent, if not existing, climate disaster. So that's just a broad overview of some of the situation that we could identify in the world that would give us opportunity or challenge us to find opportunity to speak to that. I'm now going to go to the demographics of our community, and here we're talking about Scarborough. And the statistics around this are legion. There are statistics all over the place, so I'm just being fairly general initially. Scarborough is the fastest changing neighborhood in the city of Toronto. It shifts in population and in demographics take place over very short periods of time compared to the more stable communities in the rest of the city. It is the most diverse neighborhood in the city as well. It has the most recent immigrants. It has the highest poverty levels, and it has possibly the most vulnerable social networks. Within Scarborough, and if you see a slash like that, the first number is the percentage around Scarborough. The other number is the percentage in the city of Toronto. So Scarborough has 67% visible minorities, whereas in the rest of Toronto, it's only about 40%. Another number has shown that Toronto is rising a little bit, and that in a very short time, the entire population of Toronto will have a majority of visible minorities rather than Caucasians. 57%, and this number is from 2006, so it could be a bit old, but 57% of those who are visible minorities in Scarborough were actually born elsewhere than Canada. And in the number in 2006, between 2001 and 2006, in that 5 years, one in eight had come in that previous 5 years. So that was a significant number. Between 2001 and 2006, population growth in the rest of Toronto was 0.8%, but in Scarborough it was 2.4%. Again, that rapid increase in change, that rapid growth in population. And while the population growth between 1981 and 2001, the population growth was 31%. The poverty growth in Scarborough was 137%. In the studies, the reports that have come out that Toronto has three cities in it based on economic need, Scarborough has a very high number of those that live in that third city, which is 20 to 40% or below the standard, the average, not the poverty line, just the average income. So they're 20 to 40% below the average income. Crime, however, in Scarborough and in Toronto and indeed in Canada, despite what it is that Stephen Harper continues to try to tell us, crime in Canada is on the decrease and has been going down in Scarborough. Remarkably, the amount of crime is in the city of Scarborough is statistically lower than any other place in the city. This is actually one of the safest places for you to live, this side of Victoria Park. Norm Kelly did some studies a few years ago, you may remember. He was offended by the way that Scarborough continued to be recognized and treated on the news and in the media, and he hired a couple of University of Toronto students to look into some of the things about Scarborough to find out really what was going on. Because he recognized that fear was on the rise in Scarborough, that people in Scarborough, because they were continually being hit with these statistics that named them as this pool of poverty and mixed with crime, that people were getting more and more fearful and more isolated. One of the things that they found was that Scarborough had 20% of the city's police, despite the fact that it had 24% of the city's population. That 24% of the city's population, so it had a lower crime rate than the rest of the city. Now, they speculated about whether or not that meant that because we had a lower crime rate, we had a lower number of police, 20% of the police to 24% of the population, and a 20% crime rate compared to 24% of the population. So they were saying, you know, maybe it's just because we don't have as much crime as we have police. But I'm wondering if it's the number of police that dictates the amount of crime. So I'm figuring maybe we shouldn't have any more police in Scarborough because who knows, the crime rate could go up. So that's just my little idea. In terms of libraries, though, one of the things that they found, and I find this very interesting, is that we have fewer libraries than anywhere else in the city, but we have more books than any of those libraries. And indeed, we have more books borrowed than anywhere else in the city. Scarborough has the highest number of library users than any other part in the city, and that's really a phenomenal thing, since you think of a library as a community hub. It's where people interact, where they learn, where they connect with one another. It's a very, very important part of a community. So Norm Kelly's response at that time was, hey, you know, we don't have everything, but we're pretty good, and we're a safe place to live. So that's our community. I'm now going to go to look at the religious scan. And this is a bit interesting, but probably not surprising. The pie chart on the your left is 2001. On the right is 2011. The blue section is Christian. That's the percentage of Christians in the country. The green, or the red, is the percentage of other religions in the country. And the green is the percentage of people who identify as nuns. They have no religion. Like it says religion, none. Those are the people who identify as nuns. So between 2001 and 2011, the number of Christians has dropped significantly. But a more important part of that pie for us to know is that Catholics and Orthodox Christians have grown. So they've become a bigger part of the pie, while Protestant and other Christians have dropped. So that is consistent with what Reginald Bibby says religious growth is dependent upon, and that's immigration. Also, the red slice, which you see, has also grown between 2001 and 2011. It has grown primarily because of the growth in the Islam population within Canada. So Catholics, Orthodox Christians, Muslim, all high immigration populations have altered this chart. But the decline of liberal Protestant congregations and the decline of evangelical congregations have all led to a shrinking of the number of Christians in the country over that time period. Oops, went a little too fast. Okay, a 20-year affiliation trend. We've got some visuals here that in the back row. That's the number of Christians that you can see in 1991. We're close to 80%. 2001, down to 77. 2011, down to 60-something. The other religions are in the front in that little blue thing. So over the course of that 20 years, they've gone from fewer than 10% to above 10%. And the reds, these are the nuns, again, N-O-N-E-S, are the fastest growing group in Canadian demographics. So that's an important thing. And here is those who come to some kind of a church or some kind of a religious institution in the course of a week. You'll see that those who came weekly diminished from 1985 to 2005, going from almost 30% down to about 20%. Those that were infrequent went from just below 50%, dipped down, and then went back up again. But those who never went continued to go up. Again, that's the fastest growing change in Canadian demographics in religion. So now we're at West Hill. And what West Hill, this is the study about what West Hill has to offer, what West Hill can do in given that kind of an environmental scan of the global and the community situation and the religious situation. This is our mission statement that we created a few years ago. Moved by a reverence for life, to pursue justice for all, we inspire one another to seek truth, live fully, care deeply, and make a difference. Church at West Hill, we are an intentional, non-exclusive, values-based congregation that stimulates its members to develop and sustain right relationship, provides outreach to the local neighborhood, and is stable, more or less, in financial and volunteer human resources. And if the rest of you who have not got your packages and your commitments back to Kelly did that this week, we would be considerably more stable in financial and volunteer human resources. So at West Hill, we are experts at transitioning a liberal Christian congregation to a values-based congregation, providing inspirational, non-exclusive Sunday gatherings, and developing resources for a values-based congregation. So you can see we've got a lot going for us, and we had to sort of check that out, take an inventory of what the gifts and resources we had were. Church at West Hill is a resource to individuals, a catalyst for civic engagement, and an inspiration toward healthy congregations and communities, both in Scarborough and across Canada. So at West Hill, we do all those things. We actually inspire people to come to understand the world around them, to learn about empire, even if we don't use those words, to learn about injustices and inequities, and to strive to do something about that. We strengthen individuals here so that they go out and they work as volunteers in any number of civic organizations. They lead that conversation in their families and amongst their groups at the curling club and other places to talk about how the world looks right now and how we might change it and make it something better. So we do all of that at West Hill for people who like church. And that's one of the major pieces that we found we needed to address. We do that for people who like to come together on a Sunday morning, to stand up, sit down, pass the plate, engage in traditional ways of doing church. But we recognize that we had an opportunity to do something more. So I'm just going to review this, the effects of empire. That all subjects of empire are indoctrinated by falsehoods, distortions, misrepresentations that give rise to overt and covert forms of violent power over ourselves, others, and the planet. We're able to resist that, to speak truth to power, to speak truth amongst our friends and families as we have come to know it, when we are healthy people. When people are strong and confident, when they have what they need, they can actually be about that work. And we're a significant part of helping to support and strengthen healthy individuals. Healthy people are able to engage in the pursuit of truth, personal, communal, political, and economic. Oops, I forgot. Yeah. And that leads to right relationship with self, others, and the planet. Healthy people do that. We help create healthy people. They're the most able to do that in healthy communities. And healthy communities have safe, clean physical environments. They recognize the need for equity and social justice. They develop strong, mutually supportive relationships. Large number of participants take part in decision making, and there are strong spiritual and cultural heritage recognized sometimes by smaller groups within or the larger group altogether. They have a diverse and robust economy. There are broad opportunities for learning and development, access to health services, and adequate access to food, water, shelter, work, safety, and recreation. Broadly, that's what a healthy community is. And healthy communities create healthy people. There's an international movement, an international task force that was working on a program of developing the ideals for healthy cities, healthy communities. And out of that, two leading things were recognized as needed. There needs to be a comprehensive view of health and a commitment to health promotion. So in that comprehensive view of health, we're not talking about whether or not I have a cold. We're talking about whether the community exists in a stable situation of peace, whether there is adequate shelter, and by adequate I mean adequate to the environment, to the elements, to the climate at that particular place and what the individuals need, that there is education accessible for children and for adults that need retraining, that is made available to them, that there is adequate and often local sources for food, that there are a variety of forms of income made available to the people in those communities, and that those who are unable to find work or unable to work, that there are social systems in place that can support them and enable them. That there are stable ecosystems and sustainable resources. That social justice is a norm, and when inequities become apparent, that the system works to eliminate that inequity. Those are healthy communities. That's a healthy and comprehensive understanding of health. Health promotion means building health policy, creating supportive environments, and strengthening community action. And that's where we live. We're in the strengthening community action. We can help develop personal skills that are necessary to address health and community issues, and these are their points, not ours, but we fit them. Reorienting services from individual and treatment-centered to community-centered and focused on the promotion of healthy communities. So we have this global experience of a growing sense of empire with all of the different elements that come down from that that can be negative, right straight down to the individual. We have here in this place a healthy community that helps to create and nurture and support healthy individuals that can then go beyond this place to work at creating healthy communities around them. A critical number of healthy people are needed in a healthy community. They need to be able to establish connection, to live with cooperation, and to create what I call a dynamic stability. In other words, there needs to be stability in the community, but it can't be a hard stability that cannot shift and change with the needs of the people as those needs shift and change. Healthy communities have a critical number of members and leaders who recognize, understand, and resist empire. Okay, I'm going back to our mission statement. Our mission statement is really about that work. The use of the word empire doesn't happen here a whole lot. But what we're doing, we're moved by a reverence for life. We're immediately taken out of the equation that pushes us toward the accumulation of wealth, because we have a reverence for life, not just wealth. That we want to pursue justice for everyone, not just for ourselves. That we inspire one another. Our role is to inspire, not motivate, not make somebody do something, but inspire people to seek truth, to live fully, to care deeply, and to make a difference for people who like church. Because we, and I mean religion as a whole, and I mean not necessarily religion, actually, I mean liberal communities of faith that have upheld this tradition of working against the forces of empire. Because we are falling behind, healthy communities are falling behind. I am convinced, although I don't have the time to do a doctorate to prove it, but I am convinced that the decline of mainline liberal congregations adds to the decline of civic participation and healthy communities in our nation, perhaps in North America. I think that's a significant and important thing. And so, we need the studio at West Hill and a program that we call Living Right Relationship. The purpose of the studio at West Hill will be to create and nurture healthy communities. That's what we see is the most important thing to do. It's not, as communities of faith have often been, about looking at personal salvation. It's not as a new evolution of newer understandings of religion or spirituality treks have us on. It's not about one's coming to know oneself more deeply. All of that can happen, but it happens within community. So our purpose is to create and nurture healthy communities by nurturing and supporting healthy individuals. So it's a two-piece project that we're about. And it's for people who don't like church. So it's perfect. Many of you will love this program too. It's not just for people who don't like church. But it reaches a whole new population in the community. The critical number of healthy people, remember, connection, cooperation, a dynamic stability, and a critical number of members and leaders who recognize, understand, and resist empire are important for healthy communities. So the people that we make, that we are able to support, are able to engage in the pursuit of truth, personal, communal, political, economic, and probably half a dozen others, which lead to right relationship with self, others, and the planet. And we will teach and model how to engage in the pursuit of truth, personal, communal, political, economic, and whatever other ways we possibly can. In order to develop and strengthen right relationship with self, others, and the planet, and so create healthy communities. Now I'm going to show you a graph, and I don't want you to get upset that you can't read it, because I'm going to sort of tell you a little bit about it. But one of the reasons that I'm just telling you a little bit about it, and I'm showing you a graph that you can't possibly read, is because of this dynamic part of the dynamic stability. This is a program in flux. We've put in grant applications based on being able to offer this kind of a program, but we know that when we do that, the conversation will ensue. And those who want to offer us the money will want to help us find a good and better and solid way to do this. So this is a model that we created on the back, on one of the tablecloths. I know you guys noticed there was a tablecloth missing. Well, we wrote all over it with marker one day, and we came up with this plan, Kelly and I. So, and the board and those who were working on this project got into it. It got creative, and this is how it's ended up. See? You can't see that. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about this, and then I'm going to tell you about another significant aspect of it that didn't even make it onto the chart. In the program Living Right Relationship, which comes under this thing called the studio at West Hill, there are a number of ways that we engage people in the process of strengthening their own health. And that's health in a comprehensive sense of the word. The first thing that happens, that little circle off to the side, the little orangey colored circle, is someone comes into contact with some marketing materials, or someone invites them to come to a session at the studio in which they will, in that first green box, they will participate in a starter session that looks at relationship and helps us understand what right relationship means. What does it mean to be in right relationship with someone? I mean, does it mean, you know, doing everything that they want so you never fight? What does it mean to be in right relationship with yourself? We're not going to talk about that at length. We're just going to talk about what it means to be in right relationship. One of the most important aspects of human life is that we are in relationship. How many of you have taken courses on how to be in relationship? We just assume everyone knows. Okay, there's one in the back room. There's always one. But we assume we know what it means. And we don't necessarily know what it means. We've got stuff handed down to us from our parents and from authorities in our life, and we've learned, you know, in relationship with a variety of different people, and we come to understand what relationship is a bit, but we could always learn a little bit more. So just the concept of relationship is something that we speak about in this starter session. Following that, there's a little oval there. This program would allow you to, once you've done that and you've got this idea of relationship and you know that the next thing coming down the pipe is the self, others, the planet, and the future, these are the four different components of the program, you could actually meet with a coach to help you identify where you wanted to go. Our hope is you're going to want to do all four of them because they're going to be so compelling, but you might want to just do one. You might want to just do others, you know, your relationship with other people. You might want to do the future if you think you've got everything, you know, straightened out in your relationship with yourself and other people and the world around you. You may choose just one, but the point is there are four different modules available, each of them starting with that green rectangle, which is the starter session at which you learn about relationship with that particular thing. The top one is relationship with self. The second one is the relationship with others. The third one is relationship with the planet. And the fourth one is relationship with the future, what I call big future. Now, all those little hexagons, what are all those little hexagons? Well, once you've finished the module about relationship with self, others, and the planet, and the future, the reality is that this community, and I mean Scarborough, I mean this our area around us, is overflowing with people who know stuff about stuff. They know about interpersonal relationships. They know about the Great Lakes waterways. They know about future projections of climate or economics. They know these things. And so the important aspect of the program is that we will be in partnerships. Each of those little hexagons is a different course that would be provided and facilitated stamped with the Living Right Relationship logo, whatever it ends up looking like, that's taught by someone in the community, taught by someone who knows something about relationship with yourself, relationship with others, relationship with the planet, or relationship with the future. And so the partnerships that we've, some of which we've thought about already, will be with the Scarborough Center for Healthy Communities, the East Scarborough Storefront, Centennial College, University of Toronto Scarborough, City of Toronto Recreation Department, the Toronto District School Board, the Toronto Public Libraries, Scarborough Boys and Girls Club, Scarborough Theatre Guild, the Amadeus Choir, the Art Guild of Scarborough, the Toronto Police, the Native Canadian Centers, local professionals, local wellness providers, local entrepreneurs, local charitable organizations like Habitat, Girl Guides, Boy Scouts, a variety of different ways, people. The idea is that the sky's the limit in terms of what we can offer as we seek right relationship with ourselves, others, the planet, and the future, and what it is that we have through a coordinated effort to offer to the community around us. One of the significant parts of the project that doesn't show up on the graph because we hadn't figured out how to stick it in there is a part called synthesis. Because there's nothing worse than learning a bunch of information, a bunch of practices, and not being able to work it into your life, massage it into how you live in a way that's significant enough that it's actually going to make a change. That forming of a habit around how you speak to someone, how you look at yourself in the mirror in the morning, how you choose to spend your money, the forming of those habits, there's argument about how long it takes to do it, but they only happen if you massage a new behavior into the behavior that you already have. And so the program has two sets of synthesis elements within it. One is a small group set, which would put everyone who entered that program into a small group with other people to set goals, to be accountable, to share in social interactions so that you all know that you're all on some kind of a journey and you hold one another tenderly as a result of that. And then in larger synthesis events, which bring the whole community together, and might look like a Sunday morning service, might look like some kind of a recital, might look like a lecture, might look like a deeply moving, integrating ritual. So these two kinds of synthesis events, one in a small group setting, one in a large communal setting, those will integrate the things that we saw on that larger group, so that you're never alone and you're never isolated. You're always bringing it back to other people, and you're always massaging it into your lifestyle. This next graph is about interest, who we think might be interested. You saw the graphs that showed that, you know, liberal Christianity is just dwindling incredibly. And that the number of nuns who don't identify with any particular religion is growing. Our non-exclusive community gathering on Sundays is open to any of those people if they like church. But those who aren't interested in church probably wouldn't make their way there. The red and the green in this, the blues are the ones who are already attending. This side it's adults, that side it's teenagers. And you see adults have a lot of sway over teenagers that come to church, but then once they become adults, woo, there's a big drop-off. We're all familiar with that drop-off. But the numbers of people who are interested, if church was interesting, if it had something to give them that was something that would inspire them, make sense, have something to do with their week to come, those greens, the number of people who would find a way to come is that green box. And both in adults and in teenagers, it's a significant box. That's our market. But our market could actually be that entire red and green shaft, because what they're talking about is whether or not they'd like to go to church. And we're now thinking that maybe the reds would like to go to the studio. So the church at West Hill and the studio at West Hill, those two things operating from this place, West Hill, and creating a template that other progressive religious or non-religious organizations could put into place in communities across the country to create healthy individuals, to nurture and support healthy individuals so that they can create and nurture healthy communities. That's the work that we've been talking about. I leave you with that, recognizing that there is a lot to talk about, and noting that the background, it seemed to be more about the background than it was about the project. But I think that's the way it needs to be at this point in time. Each one of us knows where our own personal lives come up against that thing called empire. Our own personal lives rub up against hostility in the world. People getting angrier and more upset in the police statistics. The only crime rates that went up were sexual assault and robberies in this area. All the rest of them went down. But as our communities continue to fragment, continue to isolate individuals, as empire continues to isolate individuals, the responsibility to do something about it becomes more and more evident and stronger a responsibility that we need to meet. I believe we're ready. The board believes we're ready. The team that did those meetings, believes we're ready. And when we get to our annual meeting on February 4th, hopefully we will have heard something from one of the granting bodies and we'll be able to make some decisions going forward. Following the service, the board members, Randy and Ken, who are a significant part of the project, Dana, who else was a big part of the project here? Kevin, yes. We'll all be around to talk to you about some of the ideas. Laura, you were part of that conversation. Talk to you about those ideas that have come up, what it might look like. You probably have some questions. I'm hoping you're excited. And I hope that in lieu of the personal inspiration that I seek to stimulate in each of you each week, my hope is that there's a communal inspiration that I have passed to you in lieu of that today.